It's hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45 with some NBA free agency news. At 2:30, why November 22nd and 23rd matter, including ScarJo's birthday yesterday. And in mere minutes, we're talking Longhorn football and previewing the basketball season with Joe Cook of Inside Texas. I'm Trey Elling. Sam Pica behind the glass and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
It's fun to say ScarJo. ScarJo. Even more fun to look at.
She's a beaut.
Oh, she's great. She's fantastic. All right, hour number three. And if you're jumping in, Longhorns press conference today with Tom Herman. It was the level of boring that it needed to be after last week. No craziness, no drama. And the biggest news out of it would be the injury report, which wasn't even that thrilling, but in a good way. Keontae Ingram, still questionable, but everything else is really good news. Joshua Moore, Jared Wiley listed as probable by the coach. And he said everybody else we would have asked about is expected to play. So to me, that means Coburn and Brewer and Whittington and, you know, Jake Smith continuing to come back from what he's dealt with. All should be able to go. Texas and Iowa State, of course, an 11 o'clock kick this Friday morning. So we will get you started at 7 a.m. bright and early with Longhorn Game Day brought to you by Coors Light. We ready to roll? Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. Our now Monday conversation that we're going to install is Joe Cook from Inside Texas, also the 1-0 podcast. Anybody that can do a podcast with Brad Kellner is a friend of ours. He's also at JosephCook89 on Twitter. Joe, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely. And like Trey mentioned, basketball's getting cranked up this week. We definitely wanted to get your thoughts on that, but first off, in terms of football and the matchup with Iowa State, give us your general thoughts. This is a weird contrast where, yeah, sometimes a team has a short week. Both these teams were supposed to have short weeks, but now it's Iowa State with a normal short week and Texas with just huge hunk of time where they go bye week and then no game. How do you think it's going to affect each one?
I think that definitely does help Texas in the fact that they had some guys that they really wanted back. They needed guys like Keandre Coburn and Cade Brewer and even Jordan Whittington back in order to have their best chance of winning that game. So to have, you know, extra recovery time for them and a chance for them to, you know, get back in the starting lineup this Saturday, I think is big. For Iowa State, though, I mean, when you go out and the conference opponent and a pseudo rival 45-0, that's got to help your confidence too. So, you know, I don't know who it really helps, but I think, you know, going into this game, Texas knew that the top four teams in the conference this year were likely going to be Oklahoma State and Iowa State joining them. They're 1-1, and whether they leave that group with a winning record will be determined by this upcoming game.
Joe, with Jordan Whittington coming back this weekend, obviously the two games he's played so far this year he's been very productive in, but unfortunately he tweaks something in a game and ends up having to miss a month. Great to get him back this weekend. Do you think we see he and Jake Smith on the field quite a bit together? And if so, which receiver is he replacing on the field?
I'm not sure if you see both those guys on the field at the same time. I think there's a chance you could, and it would involve Jake Smith being at the Z receiver spot, that outside spot. But he's tried that. I think he tried it against TCU. It didn't work out very well. And in an availability with the media, he mentioned, you know, I'm just kind of comfortable in the slot right now. Maybe that's changed since he was last available to the media. But hopefully they don't have to test that out if Josh Moore is able to go and play that normal Z position. Honestly, you know, it seems like it's pretty obvious that they should find ways for both those guys to get on the field at the same time. But, you know, just 10 personnel isn't something we've seen Tom Herman want to do at all during his Texas tenure. And I don't know if they will get rid of that position rigidity at all up ahead of this upcoming weekend to maybe facilitate both those guys getting on the field.
Talking about Joe Cook of Inside Texas, and as we mentioned, because you would assume, because Tom Herman said that Wiley is probable and then everybody else should be good, meaning Brewer, maybe that 12 personnel will be there a little more, whereas it wasn't going to be there against Kansas. We will see. Joe, in terms of the defensive side, I could imagine a Longhorn fan earlier in the year being a little nervous at the idea of this Iowa State offense against the Texas defense, but The Texas defense has been coming along, and they've been showing some stuff. What do you think about this matchup? Clearly, Iowa State was able to show what they wanted to against Kansas State, but I'm not sure how much we learn from that 45-0. What do you think of that matchup? You think Texas can hang with Purdy, those tight ends, and Breece Hall?
You know, I think they'll be able to hang with they'll be able to stop the Iowa State passing game. I think Brock Purdy will have a good game, but I don't think it's going to be a transcendent game. I think that Breece Hall is going to be able to get his. Now, whether it's going to be, you know, 4.5 yards a carry and 2 touchdowns, 120 yards or something like that, or maybe like, you know, 80 yards or around there, 75, something, you know, probably closer to 50 than anything like that. That I don't know. That's going to be a big matchup and a way to determine how the game goes. But I'm really concerned about those tight ends. You know, Charlie Kolar is the one that stands out. But there aren't very many Big 12 offenses that have three tight ends on the field. And it's not something that the Texas defense is forced to see very often. So I'm curious how Chris Ash is going to respond to that. It will probably entail a very, very big game from the linebackers, including Demarvin Overshown and even Chris Adamora at that spur position. So I really think that seeing how, you know, the short to intermediate passing game with the tight ends, how they fit in the offense for Iowa State and how Chris Ash counters, that's what I'm going to be looking for most, because I think the Texas defensive line has proven that, you know, they are very good against the run. But still, Breece Hall is Breece Hall, the leading rusher, or one of the nation's leading rushers, for a reason. That he'll get some of his. I think they can put some sort of limit on Brock Purdy, but not a total limit. I just really want to see how those tight ends fare, because I think that's going to be Iowa State's best bet to move the ball. And if Texas can't stop it, it's going to be a long game.
Texas D-line is really good. Tom Herman was very complimentary of the Iowa State defensive line earlier today during his Monday press conference. Do you think we see this Texas offensive line continue to show improvement, building on what was a pretty solid game for them versus the Mountaineers a couple weeks ago?
This is going to be a good test. I really think that they can. And I was kind of thinking, you know, Tom Herman mentioned the guys on Iowa State's defensive line. I thought, maybe that's an upgrade. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, the Stills brothers. You know, they take these tough defensive lines. So the thing they'll have to do is figure out how to pass protect a little bit better. They kind of sort of started to get it together in the run game, especially with Bijan Robinson starting to grab more and more carries. This is also a unique Iowa State defense. Tom Herman kind of mentioned how, you know, when they're playing defense and when you're on a team playing defense and preparing for an option offense, it's a difficult challenge. And I don't think the 3-3-5 that Jim Heacock runs that Tom Herman ran against in practice over and over last year is too much or too similar to that option in the preparation that it needs for that. But it still is quite a wrinkle. And, you know, Texas has definitely struggled with it in the past few years. I think last year was the first time they got over 30 against Iowa State since they eclipsed that defense. And it wasn't even above 30. So these have not been high-scoring games in recent years. And I'm not sure. I think that trend should end up continuing, to be quite honest with you.
So, Joe, obviously this version of college football has a lot of analytics in it, and I know you love numbers and all that stuff too. Well, this game has a weird number to it. Texas can control their own destiny if they beat Iowa State by 8 or more. Then they'd cover themselves on any tiebreak that might exist. Do you think Tom Herman and his coaching staff need to coach this game to that stat and know that winning is obviously the most important thing, but that they need to try to win it by 8 or more to protect themselves on the backside?
I think that's something that fans can consider, but I don't think that's something Tom Herman should really be considering. Yeah, it'd be nice to have that 8-point cushion and to maybe be clear of some of those tiebreakers should you get into a situation where you need those. But you know, coaches are paid to win. They're not necessarily paid to win by 8 or anything like that. And that's all that really matters as far as the standings go is winning. Because, you know, if they don't do that, if they end up losing by any margin or even if they, you know, or anything like that, it's not going to matter. They have to worry about winning this game and then letting the next 2 weeks of Big 12 play take care of what it needs to take care of. And, you know, if it works out good for the Longhorns, then, you know, it's because they ended up winning this game. And I just don't think that that 8 points is something the coaches need to factor in. They just need to worry about the 1-point victory.
Right.
Speaking of margin, the margin for error for Tom Herman in terms of his future as the coach of the Longhorns is maybe up for debate. Do you feel like we are at a point right now where Tom Herman either wins the Big 12, including that championship, obviously, otherwise Texas will have a different coach this time next year?
And it feels like that. I think that, you know, everybody knew that the Big 12 championship was kind of the expectation, at least reaching it, and that the preferred outcome was to win it, especially this year, Sam Ehlinger and you know, new play callers, an improved system, you know, all the different things that were going in Tom Herman's favor for this season. For him not to get there, I mean, and it would, for him to not get to the Big 12 championship game, I think would be, you know, would give you enough data on the Longhorn program to know what it's going to be with Tom Herman. And, you know, I don't think that, and as weird as it sounds, you know, winning the Big 12 would still be winning the Big 12. Losing it would also be losing it and not reaching that expectation. So, you know, it does kind of feel like it's Big 12 title or bust, but there's still a lot of things left to play out. And, of course, as those things play out, Inside Texas will be all over it.
Talking with Joe Cook of Inside Texas. Check out InsideTexas.com for all the latest. Check out the 1-0 podcast as well, at JosephCook89 on Twitter. Joe, obviously another sport cranking up this week with the basketball team getting started. Home game with Rio Grande Valley and then off to the Maui tournament, which is weirdly in North Carolina, but it's 2020. So that makes a whole lot of sense. If you're a Longhorn basketball fan listening right now, how much do you think they're going to like this team? What's going to stand out about this basketball team? Is this going to be one that maybe for the first time in a while Longhorn fans are really going to enjoy watching?
I really think so. I think you've got all the traits of, you know, what is needed for success in college basketball. You have the right amount of experience, which seems to be a dwindling commodity in Power 5 basketball. You've got, you know, all upperclassmen guards, including a senior point guard in Matt Coleman, his understudy and co-pilot kind of in Courtney Ramey. And then you've got Andrew Jones, who, you know, outside of being the phenomenal story that he is, he's a really good basketball player, and he's a really good scoring guard. So you have the right amount of experience with ball handlers. You have plenty of competition in the post with guys who can fill a variety of roles. And then you have the just the right amount of young, lottery, one-and-done talent with Greg Brown. So I think this team will look different in that Greg Brown, while can play down low, he's not like a true center like Jackson Hayes and Mo Bamba, even Jared Allen was. He's got a little bit more range to his offensive game, and hopefully that means that Shaka Smart won't try to do pick and roll every time with him up the floor. So I think this should be a lot better team, you know, compared to last couple of years, and that's even with the win streak last year and the run at the NIT and then the run to the NCAA tournament the year before. This has a chance to be Shaka Smart's best team, and if it's not his best team, I think you can kind of figure out everything you need to know about Shaka Smart if you haven't done so already. This will be, you know, this really does not have, this roster does not have a lot of holes except for maybe some shooting, you know, shot creation, and maybe, you know, figuring out who the right big is. So this is, and it's, but they got to figure it out in a very, very tough conference. You know, the Big 12 has West Virginia Tech, Baylor, Texas, and I'm forgetting one more, but there's still plenty, and Kansas, of course. So there's still plenty of challenges in this conference, but I think that's going to be a part of why this year is so entertaining, because I think Texas, with this talent, with who they have, can hold their own against those teams and maybe position themselves for a run at one of the top couple spots in the conference.
Where do you rank Shaka Smart amongst in-game coaches in the Big 12?
I think he's probably going to have to be lower half in that regard. Just thinking of the guys like Bob Huggins, Chris Beard, you know, Bill Self. I mean, that's just off the top right there. I don't think that he's awful at it, but I think that because of kind of the limited nature of the X's and O's that Shaka Smart has at his disposal, his ability to adjust on the fly is just kind of limited by the lack of you know, some of the stuff he has on offense. So I don't think that means he's terrible at it, but I think it just means that he is outclassed by his peers in certain regards, and I think that's been pretty evident over the past few years.
I'm with you on the perfect storm element with this Texas basketball team, returning 100% of your scoring, adding five-star Greg Brown to the mix. You have depth at pretty much every position now. Do you think we actually see more of Shaka's chaos that he became so well known for at VCU because so much is going for him right now to just try and add one more disruptive element to this team?
I don't think we're ever going to get Havoc that defensive style. I think the press will always be a part of what Shaka Smart does, and it's something that he's good at coaching. But I just don't think he believes it's something he needs to do for 40 minutes a game in order to win. Now that gamble has, you know, proven successfully and unsuccessful, you know, as it's played out over the past couple of years. But I don't think just because you have depth, you're going to run, you know, the starting guards you have, you know, 20, you know, running them up and down the floor 30, 33 minutes a night playing press. You know, just because you have those guys doesn't mean you want to exert them too much. And that kind of stands for all the positions. So it'll continue to be an integral part of his strategy. But, you know, I don't think we're going to see an emphasis on it this year more so than any other year, really. I think we're going to kind of see that press style play at the normal rate that it has been during Shaka Smart's tenure in Austin.
I'm sorry, I called it chaos. You correctly identified it as Havoc. Good job on that one. And last thing for me on basketball, Joe, what do you think the ceiling is for this team this year? I mean, it certainly feels like they are all but a shoo-in to make the tournament. How far do you think they can go if and when they get there?
Well, like I mentioned, having experienced ball handlers is big, and even though it was not much experience, Matt Coleman has experience in the NCAA tournament, and then, of course, those years playing in the Big 12 tournament. So I think the reasonable expectation should be to think that this team makes the second weekend and is playing for some really important spots. Whether Shaka Smart will get there or get them to the tournament is not a question that we can have a good idea of answering at this point, just because he doesn't have a track record of it at Texas. But I think with the talent on this team, you have those, you know, they have become luxury pieces, and they're having experienced ball handlers. You've got a one-and-done talent who may not be, you know, polished by the time his season is over, but it's going to add more and more this year, and that will help the Texas basketball team a lot. You've got a really good post guy in Jericho Sims who may need to figure out a role, but you know what he can do, he does really well. So I think there really are, you know, second weekend expectations for this team, and they're going to be battle tested in that Big 12. I mean, like I mentioned, I think half of the Big 12 is in the top 10 of the Ken Palm Advanced Analytics, and that's basically one of the go-to advanced rankings for college basketball these days. So I think you can expect great things or you can hope for great things, expect kind of something similar to what Shaka Smart has been producing on the floor these past few years, and then just kind of let it play out from there. But I think there are definitely lofty aspirations, and the NIT won't cut it this year.
Joe, before we let you go, do you like Tom Herman and the crew to keep it going and give themselves a chance to get to Arlington? You like them to beat Iowa State?
You know, I think after that Oklahoma State game, I realized, and I had the realization and belief that this team's going to end up in Arlington. And I think Iowa State's big win against Kansas State may have knocked some of my confidence down, but I still think that this team, especially with all the different, you know, events going on with it being senior day and with the extra, you know, extra days of rest practice for, I think that still has them in a position to win this game, but I don't think it's going to be high scoring. I bet it's something kind of close to last year. Probably will, if you're going to make me put a number on it right now at this point in the week, I'll go 27-21 Texas.
There you go, Joe Cook. Check out InsideTexas.com. Check out the 1-0 podcast. And if you're on Twitter, give him a follow at JosephCook89. Joe, have a good week. Happy Thanksgiving, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
good stuff.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Cook. We'll do that every Monday, kind of talking some Longhorn sports. Obviously, not only does he cover football, but he does cover basketball and baseball, so we'll be talking about those sports with Joe moving forward. Wednesday is when it starts. I was rolling over the roster here, man. All those names that people will recognize. First time in a while, Trey. Texas basketball fans have had names. Liddell, Jones, Coleman, yeah. Ramey, Ham, Williams, Febris, Sims. I mean, there's all these names you'll know, and then you add in the name that everybody was waiting for, Greg Brown. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. Wednesday night at 7 is game number 1 for Texas. You can hear it right here on the horn. Up next, it is November 23rd. We'll tell you why it matters. Flutie chunking a ball. ScarJo's got a birthday. We'll see if we can get into some other stuff, too. Hope you're having a good Monday. Before we get out of here, we'll go stems and seeds. Unfortunately, positive COVID tests around sports, including a couple of Baltimore Ravens and a coach that a lot of you know very well if you're a Longhorn fan. That's coming on the horn. Oh, there we go. Horn section on a Monday. What do you got, Sam?
This is some Skunk Funk by the Brecker Bros.
Some Skunk Funk, that's the name of it?
Some Skunk Funk.
Excellent. Sam Pika producing. We had a little version of Am I the A-Hole earlier. An interesting kind of a morality play about being a bartender, and you overhear that a woman is pregnant, and then he decides to throw some virgin drinks at her. Afterwards, she finds out about it and gets completely mad, and then his manager flipped out on him. So we had that discussion earlier.
Did we hear how many virgin drinks were ordered for this woman?
It sounded like it was quite a few rounds.
Three, four, like, maybe?
He gave her the first one, and he was like, okay, that's cool. And then after that, that was when he started plying her with the virgin cocktails.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Really interesting. What I would have made, the extra step I would have done is when you tell your boy at the bar, I would specifically say to him, dude, make sure you don't put virgin on there. Yeah. I don't want her to know. Yeah.
Gotta at least go that far with it.
You know, because like bartenders, they'll do the thing where, you know, I'm sure there's places where you're gonna water some stuff down for the certain customers and whatever. You're gonna take certain measures.
Hopefully you're not.
But you know what I'm saying? You got a regular that's coming in and you know that Cliff is gonna sit down and just hammer him down all night. You know that even if Cliff orders this particular whiskey, let's give him the cheaper whiskey. Let's water it down a little bit. Cliff's not going to know the difference.
You know, you don't have to be such a cheap ass as a bartender. Good Lord.
I'd be a bad bartender.
Talking about watering down the drinks of your regulars?
To keep them safe, Trey. To keep them safe.
But what if Cliff is a really good tipper when he's wasted?
Well, then you give him the good stuff.
I was a very bad bartender for a little while, and it wasn't because I was underserving or watering things down. It was because I was constantly overserving. Point of getting people too drunk.
Sure.
But just like, you know, oh, it's not my liquor, bro. I'm not going to be stingy with it. I don't care. Yeah, I'll pour you a little extra in there.
I'll give you
a double for the price of one or something.
How'd you know Sam was bartending? Well, because there's a pile of people right by the jukebox, literally piled up. That's how I knew. All right.
One of the biggest benefits of being roommates with a bartender in college is the amount of alcohol that you drink without having to pay.
That's good stuff. Just
throw a couple extra bucks on the electric bill, Brian.
Good stuff right there. All right, let's jump into November 23rd. Tell you why today matters.
Why Today Matters, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialist. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialist. 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
Definitely shout out to Sinus and Snoring. Today is the anniversary of one of the craziest, wackiest endings to a football game ever. Today is the Flutie Hail Mary game with Boston College and Miami, November 23rd of 1984. We went back and watched the play today. I heard Aaron say this morning, but the pure distance that Flutie gets on the ball is one of the craziest things about the play. Trey, you watched it earlier.
I didn't realize it was that much ground cover.
You are not one that's prone to hyperbole. You're going to tell it like it is. So how far did that ball travel?
65 yards in the air.
Yeah.
I didn't know Doug Flutie had that in him.
That was a chunk.
Like, I just assumed for whatever reason, because I do remember seeing the 40 prior to this morning, but I think I always assumed it was the other 40.
Yeah.
Because Flutie is just so small, and he rolled back a good 10 to 12 yards, too.
I feel like the Cordell Stewart to Westbrook play Colorado over Michigan, that Hail Mary, I feel like that was about the same distance.
Okay.
He chunked that ball a long way, too. But the Flutie thing was incredible. I remember watching it live, Brent Musburger on the call. Like, it was just awesome. And we all, but in 84, Miami's not, they probably aren't quite the machine they would become, but they're nasty at that point.
Dude.
Miami can play.
The Cordell Stewart Hail Mary is, it's a few yards further. It is about 70 yards in the air.
70,
he is standing inside his own 30 when he lets that ball go. And
it goes into the end zone, doesn't it?
Well,
or
so
just about.
It's,
maybe
it's right at about the goal line, so it's just short of the end zone when the ball is touched for the first time. But that is, it's, what a cannon.
So you and I are going over this earlier before the show, and I ask you as a Texas fan, hey, you got a Hail Mary in your past, in your life, and you couldn't think of one either way.
I took it to Twitter, too.
And then I'm thinking of one like, okay, I'm an Aggie fan. I can't think of one. Again, positive or negative. I don't think my team's ever eaten one, and I don't think my team's ever gotten one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for your crew, obviously, like, the Crabtree play is close, but that's not technically a Hail Mary.
And it wasn't with zeros either.
So there's those little, and then also you and I kind of agree. If you've done it at the end of a half, I don't think that counts. To me, that's not a true Hail Mary. Hail Mary needs to be, if we drop the ball, it's over.
You're right, because Case McCoy did complete, well, it does, it's a Hail Mary, but it's not a a decide-the-game Hail Mary.
Right.
So Case McCoy had a 40-some-odd-yard bomb, which I think is as far as he could throw the football, at the end of the first half versus Iowa State. I think it was in 2013 on a pass to John Harris.
Okay.
And I do vaguely remember that one. That one's listed on the internet. But as far as game enders, one way or the other, I don't know if Texas has had one in my lifetime.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Hail Mary kind of got its name from a Cowboys play, but I'm too young to remember that. Staubach to Pearson. I didn't see that play happen. But that was the Hail Mary, how it kind of got started. So, yeah, I've never witnessed that, but I can only imagine what that's like to be a fan to witness it, first of all. Or maybe if you're a Vikings fan or a Saints fan, God help you, and you had to eat that play a couple years ago in the playoffs. Remember that thing?
Mm-hmm.
That would be considered, that's a Hail Mary, right? Was that no time on the clock?
Up the right sideline.
Yeah, the Stephon Diggs play?
There was no time left, so
technically,
yeah, theoretically, it's a Hail Mary.
Yeah, that one. To have to eat it as a Saints fan, I can't imagine. To get to experience it as a Vikings fan, can't imagine what that's like.
That one's not a Hail Mary because I feel like there was time left on the clock, and one of the reasons why the Saints defender misplayed that is because he was trying to keep him from going out of bounds.
Okay,
and he ends up staying up and running it into the end zone with no time left on the clock. The closest thing that I've come as a Longhorn fan to experiencing what it feels like for a Hail Mary, although this is not a great comparison necessarily, again, it's the closest thing I have, it's one of two things. It's either Stoney Clark's stop on the goal line, which isn't anywhere close to Hail Mary, or Tyrone Swoops taking it into the end zone to beat Notre Dame in overtime.
Yeah, see, once you get into the college overtime, you can kind of have a Hail Mary feel because there can be multiple plays where if you don't make the play, it's over.
And there's one true Hail Mary that I can think of in the overtime model.
Okay.
If I were to give you enough time, you would think of this one, too.
A Hail Mary in an overtime. Not a Texas game, but another game.
Not a Texas game.
In the college overtime system.
Big game.
Big game, college overtime, Hail Mary. What am I? Oh, the Tua throw?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's as close as you can get in the college overtime, right?
Right.
Because they were pushed back to the 40.
But the game's not over if he misses the throw.
That's fair.
That was second long,
I think,
on that throw.
No, you're right about that.
But, yeah, the Flutie play. And also just the fact that, I mean, it's 1984, college football on TV is sort of finding itself in the 80s. And again, Musburger's on the call, and it was just so, it was so cool. And Flutie was cool to watch. he was so much fun to watch.
Damn you, awestruck construction, Northern Iowa from half court in 2016, the closest Longhorn fans have to getting beat by a Hail Mary.
Wow. I didn't even bring in the basketball part of it. That can happen, too. That can happen. Those last-second shots in basketball are tough. So that is why today matters on the sports front. Big anniversary there. It is also Scarlett Johansson's birthday. Was it yesterday? 36 for ScarJo?
Yes, love her.
She's fantastic.
Do you have a favorite ScarJo movie?
Well, I am a superhero nerd, so you know
that mean?
Her role as Black Widow in the Avengers movies is going to be pretty high up there. But in terms of regular movies, I like I'm a bit of a sucker for some rom-coms, and she is particularly sexy in He's Just Not That Into You, which is that ensemble movie with Bradley Cooper. My God, she's sexy in that movie.
You know what else she looks good in? The Bill Murray flick, Lost in Translation.
Ooh, I haven't seen it.
Where they're both bouncing around Tokyo together.
Okay.
He's just a single guy, and she's been abandoned by her boyfriend or husband who's taking care of a music gig. And it's a little bit of a love story. That's a good one.
Okay. That one I need to say. I've not seen that one. But I'm looking forward to there is a standalone Black Widow movie coming out at some point, which will have ScarJo all throughout. I can't wait for that.
What are Black Widow's powers?
She is think of her as like a Jason Bourne trained weapon. That's pretty much what she is.
Okay.
She was the product of some experimentation on the mind and the body. She doesn't really have superpowers like a Captain America in terms of like true physical powers like that.
Okay.
But it's trained assassins. She and Hawkeye were both trained assassins where the previous good guys that turned bad guys were like messing with their brains and messing with their minds and stuff.
Hawkeye? So they brought a character back from MASH, huh?
Not MASH Hawkeye. No. Bow and Arrow. You know, Jeremy Piven. What's his name? Jeremy
Renner.
Renner. Thank you.
Jeremy Piven as a superhero would be an interesting one.
Ari Gold. Gold Man.
Just curse you into the ground.
Yes.
She was also good in Jojo Rabbit, which came out in 2019.
Oh, I've not seen it. Is
and I've
good
heard
movie?
Good things. That is a really good movie. And then also Marriage Story. I've heard that's one you don't want to watch with your person.
You don't. I saw it. It's great. I didn't watch it with my wife, and I never want to.
Okay.
Yeah, but
you just feel worse about your relationship?
She and Adam Driver are awesome.
All right.
There's a scene in a little apartment, and I swear it feels like it lasts 35 solid minutes, and it's one cut, and they have a fight, and it is unbelievable.
Mm.
It is high-level masterclass acting from both of them.
Okay.
But you're right. Do not see it. Do not see it with the person you're married to. It's just a terrible idea.
Done.
You should see it by yourself or with like a couple friends, and don't talk afterwards. That's what you should do.
She was in Home Alone 3. I have to admit, I never made it past Home Alone 2.
Didn't know there was a Home Alone 3.
Was she the kid? No.
I have no idea.
No, she's just a secondary character in Home Alone 3.
Okay, fair enough. Happy
good for her.
Happy birthday to ScarJo.
The start of the career.
ScarJo yesterday. Also, so we got that going on. That's why today matters. It is Flutie Hail Mary Day, so chunk of football as far as you can today. I bet it doesn't go 65 yards. All right, coming up, stems and seeds. Before we get out of here, a positive COVID test for some basketball coaches, football players, and one more time today, we'll remind you about the math that Texas needs on the Horn. Very nice. Some keyboard work, some horn work. What do you got, Sam?
This is In the Twilight by Soil and Pimp Sessions.
Of course it is. Sam Pika producing today. Chad and Trey with you. Shirts and Skins on a Monday. Hope you're going to have a great Thanksgiving. We hope Rick Barnes gets better very soon. He's got COVID-19, and Tennessee basketball had to pause their activities. Let's get you some more stems and seeds here. No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks. Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. So Tennessee basketball pauses. If you missed it, Scott Drew has tested positive for COVID-19, although Baylor still planning to go to that preseason tournament. Arizona State backs out of the same tournament, and a couple teams have decided there or have been not been able to go to some of the preseason stuff. Keep your fingers crossed. Texas plays Wednesday night to start basketball season. Also, this could be bad for one of my favorite football games. There's a report out that the Ravens have closed their facility for positive tests. Trey, they think it might be two of the running backs part of this group. They think
they've got like seven of them.
All right, fair enough. But they think it might be Dobbins and Ingram that have COVID-19.
They've been starting Gus Edwards these last few weeks, even though Dobbins is clearly the best option for them. I just don't understand why teams insist on splitting carries like that when you have one guy who is truly better than the others. They need to be running J.K. Dobbins more right now because they're having such a hard time at getting that rushing attack going. And the rushing attack opens up the passing game for every football team, but especially the Ravens.
You realize they'd be out of the playoffs right now? Even with seven teams in?
They're struggling,
they
man.
They would be out. Obviously, the Patriots would be out as well. And Buffalo, the Raiders, and Cleveland would all be in if it ended right now.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts? So hopefully everybody gets better from all of that. Hopefully we get the college football in this week because we're starting to get to rivalry games. One's already gone, though. The Apple Cup is not happening this week. They're hoping to move it to maybe that championship week, because assuming both those teams, then Washington State won't be. But if those teams aren't in the title game, they're going to try to play it then.
Washington has a pretty good chance of being in the title game,
Washington's
got
a decent shot. Yeah, Washington has a decent chance. But, Trey, we're going to start losing these kind of games, too. It's going to suck, but they're trying to play them. But at some point, we're not going to be able to have some of the rivals.
This is a result of the Pac-12 waiting as long as they did to try and play a fall season. You gave yourself no room for error. Mm-hmm. You actually, for some reason, started 2 weeks after the Big Ten decided to start, when you could have just gotten your S together in the summer and started relatively on time and given yourself bye weeks and other things to work with in case this sort of scenario came up.
Obviously, we got Bedlam in this weekend, and hopefully we'll get to some of those other games coming up this week and other games. But all of that out there in basketball and football. And then we've also got a lot of NBA stuff happened over the weekend.
A lot.
My God. Just some of the big ones I jotted down. Gordon Hayward, Charlotte. So Michael Jordan acquires him as well as getting LaMelo mm-hmm. Ball. Mark Gasol is going to be a Laker. Montrezl Harrell also goes to the Lakers as they are rearranging things at the center position. Jason Tatum, Celtic for life, $195 million on a five-year extension. Mm-hmm. So he's going to get a lot. Bogdanović ends up in Atlanta. Serge Ibaka is going to be a Clipper. As the Lakers and Clippers kind of rearrange some centers and try to find, you know, big men, those are some of the big names that jump out to me. If you're a Rockets fan, Harden and Westbrook still in Houston for now.
Lifetime Longhorn, and by lifetime, I mean 3 month Longhorn, Avery Bradley.
Yes.
Signed with the Miami Heat.
Ah, moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good. So the Lakers won't have Avery Bradley or Rajon Rondo because Rondo mm-hmm. moved on.
Yeah, he signed a 2-year deal with the Hawks.
Yeah. Hawks are adding a little bit of talent. I don't know. We'll see if it's too late talent.
They are. The Mavs have been quiet so far. Does that surprise you at all?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I was hoping they would move, make a couple, you know, move or two, but they did. You're right. They've been pretty quiet through the free agency period. So Monday Night Football tonight is Rams and Bucks. What do you think we're going to see there?
That's a great question. I think we see a game in the 21-17 range mm-hmm. because the Rams do have a really good defense. Be curious to see what they do with Jalen Ramsey and if they put him on Mike Evans all night, if they mm-hmm. switch him up just a little bit. But it's going to be tough sledding for Tom Brady and the Bucks tonight because the Rams defense is so good, and we know Tampa has a really good defense as well. We'll see what Sean McVay can do to scheme against that. When it's all said and done, I think we'll probably get a 4-point Bucks victory.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if you're right. That if that game is like a 21 wins the game, 24 kind of thing, which of those teams gets there first? Because mm-hmm. you're right, they both have pretty good defenses. So the number of the week for me, Trey, is 8. Because I did look this stupid, goofy tiebreaker. I say stupid. The Big 12 had to figure out some way to do this
yeah.
because you don't have divisions. I almost understand the way they do this.
This way makes more sense than straight pulling names out of a hat.
So here's the basics. If Texas ends up in a four-way tie, they are okay if Oklahoma State's a part of that four-way tie. The thing that could get them is if they end up in a three-way tie with Iowa State and Oklahoma. Oklahoma State would need to lose one game. They play Tech, they play Baylor, they play TCU. If they end up in that three-way tie, then you just go the plus-minus thing, and they'll need to beat Iowa State by 8 or more. Otherwise, they would lose that tiebreaker. They'd be the team to get kicked out, and then Iowa State and Oklahoma would go to the title game. So without going through every little bit of that math, that's the theme for the week for me. You got to win by 8 or more to then say you are absolutely in control of your own destiny. Because, Trey, if they win that game by 6 this week, it doesn't matter if they beat the Kansas teams by 50 apiece. They'll lose that tiebreaker.
As long as Oklahoma State loses one more game
Correct.
And Iowa State wins out.
And Iowa State and Oklahoma would then win out.
Because yes. Iowa State beat Oklahoma by 7 points. The Longhorns lost to the Sooners by 8 points.
Correct.
So Oklahoma's plus one right now. Iowa State and Texas are TBD.
Yep, Iowa State, yes. And if Texas beats them by 8, Texas would be at a 0, and Iowa State would be at -1.
There it is.
And there it is. And if you can beat them by more than that, do it. But if they're sitting on a 6-point lead, you definitely want to try a field goal. Find the Dicker field goal if you can to make it 9, Trey.
That will be interesting if they score a touchdown. Let's say it's a go-ahead touchdown with like 15 seconds left to see if they go for 1 versus 2.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully they understand that. Hopefully somebody in that program is listening to the show right now to know to tell Tom Herman, Tom, we got to make sure to win by at least 8 points on Friday.
Win at all costs and win by 8 or more if you absolutely can. So we'll be back tomorrow for a Tuesday show. That means Jeff Ward and Ari Temkin will jump in. We'll talk about a lot of stuff tomorrow. Up next, it is the triple option with RBKD as this short week continues. Texas and Iowa State, Cowboys and Washington, and we hope you have a great start to your Thanksgiving week. Stay safe.
See ya.